gentlemen. It is Tuesday, March 27, 2012. You're tuned into another episode of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined as always by Check 6 Pain User, EG Idra, and EG In Control. Guys, welcome. How's it been? How are you guys doing this week?
Doing good. How
not,
are you?
Not all
welcome.
At once.
Welcome. How you guys been? Well,
Pain User, that would be indicative of just how tired I am after the MLG weekend. I won't lie. Yesterday, I sounded like a zombie on Kings of Tin. I'm a little bit more recovered, but the back-to-back weekend certainly takes something out of you. And MLG was a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later. But I'm doing good. I'm glad to be back in the seat. Pain User, how about you? You had the weekend off. Unfortunately, you weren't at MLG.
Dude, I mean, I was there in spirit, man. I was watching. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I thought it was a... I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot more, but I thought it was a great production. And I feel like you guys really tied a lot of stuff together. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier in the broadcast, but I mean, it was just easy watching all weekend long. And you personally did a great job. We were talking about like the analysis, and do note, to be perfectly frank, usually I don't enjoy analysis from people who aren't high level players that I don't think can really like wrap their head around.
DJ, we did get Diamond with two accounts.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
He was not quite Grandmaster with all the races.
But. Yeah, I mean, it is two Diamond accounts, which at least amounts to, like, a low Masters, I think. So.
Yeah. You know what? You were terrible. I didn't enjoy it at all.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate it. Actually, you know what? I attribute any...
You're not going to take what I'm giving you.
Hey, it was all Jeff trolling, man. I take it all, man. I'll take it all. But honestly, I attribute any increases in knowledge, honestly, to being able to cast with guys like you. I did Masters Cup all the weekend, or you know, all through the last season, and that helped me tons. So, you know, trying not to suck since 2010, right here.
Good job, man. You were touching on a lot of solid points that I wasn't even thinking about. Like, you're really getting into like the psychology of the players, and you know what, if they were down in a series or up in a series, like where their head was at and what was going on, and that stuff that I don't really examine a lot when I'm casting. I'm usually just focused on, like, you know, the game at hand and like build orders and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
Well, we'll definitely talk more, because that's awesome that you sort of have a different perspective to add considering we were at the event. But Idra, what's up? How's the week been? How you doing?
I just got back from MLG yesterday. MLG was it had ups and downs. It wasn't too bad. It was a fun event as always, at least. So there's a I'm not too happy with my performance, but I got a tough draw. Tough opponents. So,
well, we'll definitely talk a little bit more about that when we get to MLG. In Control, how about you?
I had a good time. I really like Columbus. They have amazing fans. I was happy with what MLG had done. There was more chairs. They are getting better with their cameras. I thought it ran more smoothly. They already have, in my opinion, the best ref staff in the like in the industry. Ryan, in particular, big shout out to him. They do just an amazing job. So tournaments are pretty seamless and really fun that way. I thought it was funny because I was kind of on board with Pain User. Like, I didn't get to watch, obviously, via the stream, but I made a tweet and I said, you know, MLG's doing great here, and I heard the stream's going well. You know, congrats to them, something like that. And then I get, like, 45 tweets back, like, doing well? The stream sucks ass! And I was like, oh, I never got so many angry tweets. Well, that's not true. I've gotten a lot of angry tweets, but that was just a giant, like snowfall of angry tweets about the stream. So apparently that had some issues. They were talking about too many commercials. They were talking about low quality was really bad. I guess the paywall for the higher quality stream had a loophole once again, something like that. So someone can actually fill me in on that. Otherwise, I just tell you that my feedback was that it was actually quite bad. But as far as like performance wise, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later. I played a couple of good series. I played okay, but the results were kind of more of the same. I ran into Symbol, and then I lost to a player by the name of Binsky, and I definitely had higher aspirations for myself. So that part kind of sucked. But otherwise, it was a great event.
All right. Well, I mean, it sounds like we all definitely have MLG on the brain, so we'll talk about that very soon. But before we do, I feel like it's only appropriate that we address this subject. Now, we will definitely be touching on it more during Live on 3, but this particular event, which sounds like is on a road to complete change and, you know, ultimately a removal of sort of tradition and history from esports events. And that is these rumors going around that World Cyber Games is reverting to an all-mobile sort of platform in terms of competition. And the reason why I think it's applicable is because StarCraft, I think, really... or at least World Cyber Games was built around a lot the StarCraft, World Cyber Game, or excuse me, Warcraft 3, etc. What? What, In Control? What?
It's a disaster.
Just the path you're going down, it's really sad. Keep going, man. I don't want to cut you off.
What? Oh, So, I mean, for me, my true sort of first exposure to the you know, massive community and world, the Brood War, was World Cyber Games. Like, you know, I wasn't obviously into the game like the way that you guys were. And to me, not only seeing sort of a world go about it in the same way that they do now, trying to dethrone the Koreans who are, you know, always first and second pretty much at the World Cyber Games. And people used to joke that they made WCG so the Koreans could win StarCraft. And, you know, it is sad because I feel like that legacy never really got a chance to thrive as esports, you know, has been growing over the last year and a half. You know, both of you guys had involvements with World Cyber Games during Brood War. I mean, is it just kind of like, well, you know, what are you going to do? Or is there like a piece of, you know, your competitive history that's just kind of like sad that it's gone?
Well, I think the fact that they actually had StarCraft II last year and did it so awfully kind of makes it easier for me. That tournament was just so bad and so behind the times, just absolutely incomparable to MLG or IPL or any of the StarCraft II tournaments, that it kind of killed any nostalgia I had for it. I'm just ready for it to be put out of its misery and not try and compete anymore.
If anyone's ever had, like, a family dog, you know, or like, you love it like your own blood, and it's, like, one of your best friends in the whole world. But when it gets to that stage where it can't really get up anymore, and it's kind of breathing heavily, and it's clearly dying, it's suffering, I feel like there's a huge party that's tremendously sad, but there's also a huge party that, like Greg said, wants it to end its misery. But then there's that family dog that doesn't have its misery ended. It actually transforms into like a retarded zombie dog with like weird like penis ears hanging off, and you can't get your eyes off of them. And its face is actually like a doll's face, so it's just absolutely terrifying. And it moves around by like just kind of like hovering around, and like it always follows you. That's what's happening to WCG. I would have liked it if it had a terrible last year, and then they're like, well, we're done with that. It's stupid. But instead, they're like, introducing mobile WCG. And it's gonna be so embarrassing, not only for the former WCG, but what kind of a turnout do they possibly – anyways.
People will be like, oh, well, how could they disgrace this? And, you know, you do have to present the business side of it, right? And for those of you that aren't familiar, I mean, WCG, and make no mistake about it, it was very clear. It was like a giant commercial for Samsung, almost entirely funded by Samsung, used Samsung products, Samsung computers, Samsung TVs, like everything Samsung. And the grand schemes of the market, I'd imagine that in the world of tablets and cell phones, that's something that you can actually make a very clear-cut sale on, or conversion on, if you will. I mean, a World Cyber Games wasn't selling a lot of TVs for Samsung, I'm sure. I know, Jeff, I know.
Competition, because there's no transfer from WCG the past to now, where it's like, okay, I went pro in Counter-Strike, but... I mean, if Angry Birds is going to be what it takes, that's what's going to get me to that next stage, like... Make Samsung presents things you can do with your hands that your parents will approve of. That's what they can call it, whatever abbreviation that is. Or
things you can do with your hands that your parents approve of. I like
and,
it.
And then there they go. But I mean, like, to give you a history, because the point you just made, Wheat, is so applicable. Like, unfortunately, it's actually always been a commercial for Samsung. The show that I was on, WCG Ultimate Gamer, again with that WCG name, the games that were on that show, it's not like Samsung went to them and like, we're like, hey, we're doing the show, here's the game we want, and, you know, you're just going to take it. It was like a commercial. Those companies came to Samsung and said, "We'd like our show or our game on your show, and here's how you're going to run it, and here's how you're going to present it." And then they worked with that to advertise the game itself. WCG had games all the time that weren't there based on their merit for competition, but rather what company paid WCG to put them on their stage. Greg and I actually took third or some shit in a game called Redstone at its United States finals.
We were one match from getting second and going to Germany. Or no, one like map or set or whatever.
Yeah. One of my buddies, an Age of Empires player who always lost to Parfait, I can't remember his name now, at 2007 at the national finals, he like lost, went and played this phone game, won $5,000 or something, gets a trip to Seattle, wins the world championship, wins like $20,000.
It was like the best thing in the world that he lost in Age of Empires.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, cool for him. I'm not trying to say it's bad, but what I'm trying to say is, like, Brood War players specifically held WCG truly sacred, and I think Warcraft 3 players did to a certain extent. I know it was kind of important to Counter-Strike, but both Counter-Strike and Warcraft 3 had other big tournaments that they could go do. Brood War players only had WCG. Like, Team Liquid started organizing some tournaments towards the end that were really cool. If you're a Korean, of course you had fantastic tournaments like OGN in Korea. But for us non-Koreans, it was just WCG. So this is actually, like, the most sacred of tournaments, and it's now transformed into a penis-eared dog with a doll face. It's terrible.
The penis ears are pretty terrifying, man. Yeah.
Imagine.
You know
I'm,
what?
Like, envisioning, like, a Shinigami, like, Japanese anime face with, like, giant penis ears flopping around. it's a great mental image. But hasn't WCG been trying to do this mobile thing for
They've
a
been
while?
Adding mobile games for
like,
quite some time.
Yeah,
it's been on the way down, but they still had all the, like, the big legitimate PC titles and some of the console ones as well. Like,
so
they would tack
about,
on... They would tack
all
on...
about money, right?
Yeah.
That's all...
I mean...
The whole thing is just all about money.
Nah, I don't know. I'm not sure if StarCraft 1 was actually big enough for them because they are a Korean company, that they had it for money reasons as well. But they had the games we cared about before. Now it's just purely corporate
stuff. I can
tell
you from having talked to the guys on the inside that was like their national game. That was the game that they wouldn't give up.
Yeah.
But their numbers were like up 2007, and then on after that it was down, and then, like, the really sad part was, like, 2010, 2009, the setup was just, it was just getting really
bad.
Dude,
honestly.
They cut prices for Counter-Strike, like, at the event.
Yeah. The worst.
Ta-da, you're playing for $0.
The worst thing that WCG did, in my opinion, is go to San Francisco in 2004. Prior to that, all the events had been Korean, and I understand that they, like, you know, dude, if we take this around the world, then it's like the Olympics for real. Yeah. But in a world of such a fickle professional gaming era, you know, where you couldn't guarantee an audience in San Francisco, like, they were freaking out of their minds, man. Like, yeah. No one went to that freaking thing. No one went to it. No one.
I didn't even know. That's my hometown. And I didn't even know she came through, and I would have been there for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, I think by removing it from Korea, too, it instantly lost that mystique that was building it. And you know what? They had an audience in Korea in all their games.
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with the moving around part. Just obviously, you got to protect that investment. Like, they went to China and had the biggest audience I think they've ever had.
Yeah, yeah.
I was at the Seattle Expo. I know that you kind of talked down on that one, too. It was okay. It was okay as far as Brood War crowds go at the time outside of Korea. But you're absolutely right. In Korea and perhaps just Asia in general, you're going to get that audience.
Yeah. Well, we don't know if this is official. Some are claiming that this is a elaborate April Fool's joke, but I cannot imagine that information would be given out that would be so incredibly damaging on a company. And then
absolutely.
They'd be like, ha-ha! Yeah, that would be fucking dumb. Let's be real.
No, and I mean, as far as, like Greg said, as far as we're all concerned, competitive players have turned it off. Like, WCG is officially dead in our head. And this is just, like, the final straw of sadness, but I'm not going to lose sleep over it. Like, the nice thing is in StarCraft II, there's probably more tournaments than we can handle at this moment in time. So,
yeah,
if one of the weaker ones dies, you know, like WCG, the production they put on, it was kind of cool seeing, who was it, OGN do that? That was cool.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it was really bad.
Yeah. Well, they're... appear to be moving on to bigger and better things with their League of Legends competition, which I heard you, you know, really wanted to do the casting for, Jeff, but you had to turn that down. You know, schedule conflict.
If I could somehow infiltrate that community and do a LOL cast, that would be amazing.
Yeah? You want to make that happen, dude?
Actually, when the guys used to play LOL, or actually we played Han between beta and release, what I used to do is I just kind of walk up behind him and be like, oh, are you playing with the elephant man? Yeah, he's good. Sick. You should have picked the panda bear, though, like his warbly woo.
I remember the panda bear.
Dude, I remember the, like, every time the beta went down, everyone would just flock to Han. I mean, all of us. It was like a little phase there where Han was like our backup game. Because the beta would go down, like, every weekend.
All right. You guys laugh now, but when Blizzard Dota comes out, and you know, yeah, we're all required to play it for inside the game just for shits and giggles. We'll see. Jeff's going to get hooked.
I'll give it a shot. I was quite terrible at Han. I always picked the Blade Master, whatever his name was.
Unero.
I got yelled at so much.
Swiftly.
Supposed to be a carry. Yeah,
I got yelled at just for logging into that damn game. So, I mean, I'm not surprised. It's like the moment I log in, I've never even played the game before. Some guy's already like, God, you suck. Look at your fucking items. I'm like, dude, I just made my account, man.
Yeah, that's why it's so hard for people to get into those types of games. The community is like, you know, they've been playing Dota for 5-6 years, and it's like they just freak out whenever anybody doesn't know what's going on. Because obviously in a team game, you know, you're relying on the other five guys, and if one guy has absolutely no idea what's going on or how to play the game, it's like the most frustrating experience.
Yeah.
Now get ready real quick. It's like that machine on your team.
Anyway, I don't know. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I have to. Did you see this picture?
Brutal.
Did you see this picture?
No.
Oh, picture. I feel like I have to share it with you. Hold on one second.
Is it Greg smiling in the booth?
No, someone said, speaking of dogs, with, there you go. Check that out.
Did someone graft a penis on a dog?
No, but the next
They did. We just haven't seen that yet.
The next best thing. I posted you.
Oh, God. What's that?
Link. That's Slasher. It's so inappropriate that I can't even show it.
Dude, where'd you get that? Is that just like one of those hilarious pictures you just had laying around?
Someone tweeted it to me, actually.
Oh, yeah. That's priceless.
Yeah.
I had a picture like that of Artosis and Skew, but I lost it.
No, I can't. I'll retweet it.
Occasion.
I'm going to retweet it right now, so if you're following me on Twitter, at DJ Weed. There we go.
I don't want to move on too far off the actual things of substance, but I just want to say Slasher did a great job this weekend, and he looked very dapper. They must be paying him a shit ton of money, because that guy wore a jacket and jeans that fit him, and he cut his hair.
You know, I don't know if you guys even care to talk about this, because technically it's not StarCraft 2, but, you know, a lot of people think that, like, Slasher just, you know, some kind of, like, some people don't take him seriously, but he really, you know, especially at this event, made an effort to kind of provide coverage to an organization that really will reach a lot. No, I am too. Actually, no, I'm not saying, what I wanted to say was, you know, as a caster, when I was doing the events last year for MLG, one of the things I vividly remember during the broadcast was we would pimp the, hey guys, you know, check out the thread on Reddit and R Gaming and Something Awful and Penny Arcade and all these different communities that were talking about and engaging in, and like, you know, the tournament about MLG and watching it. And I really felt like there might have been less people overall because no one was making those social media efforts. I mean, it's definitely a discussion, like, we'll probably talk about it on Live on 3, but I was kind of like, dude, Slasher, you're like, your presence, I can tell, man. He was a rabid, I mean, I even talked to some players that he used to go up to and be like, hey, retweet, you know, watch MLG. I don't know if he ever did that with you guys, but that, I mean, he was a social media crazy man.
And it's interesting how much that's undervalued as of right now, because I feel like that's going to take a gargantuan flip in like 3 months or something. How many times I've been to like 5 esports events, not necessarily on the scale of MLG, where there's like, yeah, no one really heard about this. So,
yeah, I mean, no, yeah, it wasn't like, a, oh my god, and I have no idea. I mean, I'm just based off of the things that I saw on the internet. I didn't quite see it as widespread as I think when Slasher was like literally dedicating himself 24/7 during the event for that sort of thing. And it's an interesting like thing to think about for everyone. Like,
he landed on his feet though. I'm glad. GameSpot.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about MLG. Got some questions, you know, obviously regarding MLG. A lot of people just wanting to know, you know, Greg, a little bit about your thoughts and your performance. Also, the Kingston HyperX video that you talked a lot about. I think it's on Reddit with a front page tagline of "Investors are the way to go." And a lot of people actually emailed in and was wondering a little bit more about that. As well. Yeah, there it is. EG Indra and Festers are the way to go. It's actually 2 under. In Control calls out Halo Pro legit. So, you know, everyone sees obviously where the priorities are here.
I sneeze and it goes first on Reddit, so I can't even say, man.
But yeah, let's start with you.
Quite on par with Chielo's beard.
Yeah.
To be expected.
Which is a screenshot from your interview that just has TLO creeping out. He gets the Homeless Dude Award. It was some pretty funny.
Him.
Yeah, man.
Basically putting his entire sex life on hold in the name of StarCraft.
No. Fuck that. He made that point system. Originally, it was supposed to be he gets a major tournament winner. He doesn't shave. He pussied out.
He pussied out? Look at the man. You don't think he pussied out at all.
Oh, okay. So, Greg, you wanna talk a little bit about your performance?
It was pretty disappointing. Beating Jinro is nice, but you know he hasn't been performing too well lately, so that's not a big thing. Beating Inori, same, feels nice for different reasons. Obviously, he doesn't deserve to be there. It feels really good to beat him, but also not a great player. And then JYP and Polt, they're really really good. So losing to them isn't particularly shameful, but I mean, you don't want to lose. You
did something happen between you and Inori? Do you not? Did he say something you don't like him? Or
he's just the epitome of what doesn't deserve to be a pro gamer. Like, he's just—I don't know. I think we'll talk a bit more about that later because they wanted to. But getting pulled that early in the loser bracket, I think he was pretty much the best player that I could have run into at that point. And he's also one of the few Terrans who would worry me. Him and Marine King are the only Terrans there who I felt particularly uncomfortable with. Just because they are so dangerous early game. I feel if I can get up to Lunatech, I don't really lose CBT right now. But obviously, they really like applying pressure before Lunatech. And I didn't play very well versus Bulldog. On the bright side, I did feel like I played really well versus Jinro and Inori. And versus JYP, I played really well until I sucked. So, you know, the high points.
I mean, in your interview, you mentioned that one of the things that did suck about, you know, not only JYP as a team kill, but also it was a VP matchup, which, you know, you've been vocal about your liking of it. I mean, where do you think things went wrong there? A lot of people kind of wondering where you felt like it went wrong.
The first game, obviously, I should have switched to Infestor instead of Muta. I didn't realize he was just going pure Stalker. I figured he would add in Sentries and Immortals. And when I go Infestor, I feel pretty vulnerable to Stalker Immortal timings. But yeah, he just went pure Blink Stalker for a while. I didn't damage him, and then obviously going Mutas against that's bad. And then he went to Templar Tech upon seeing the Mutas. I should have gone Infestor instead there. And the next game, I don't really remember what happened. I remember he just killed me after I went Muta again. I don't remember what happened there. But yeah, my CVP just, I don't have very good instincts in the matchup. I'm getting better, but I don't understand it fully. And yeah, I lose a lot.
Okay, understandable. Any, you guys, I mean, Pain User, you were watching from afar. I'm sure you caught a couple of Idris games.
Yeah. I mean, I caught the games versus Pults. It's rough, like... Pult's a super crafty player. Like he's all over the place, and like Idris said, I mean, he's dangerous in the early game. He's dangerous at any point in the game, and he's got a lot of crazy wonky timing pushes that
throw people off. And I think, I mean, he's just a tough player to deal with. He has a lot of different looks he can throw at you. And one thing you can rest assured of is that Pult's like perfect outcome game situation is nowhere on par to Greg's, I don't think. Like, he's not trying to get into the late game like macro mode and go blow for blow in like a straightforward macro game. And I mean, he played his game well.
Well, he definitely played to an aggressive style as well.
Absolutely.
Mean, Greg, do you feel like he did that just because you were his opponent?
No, Pult always plays early game aggression. Always. He's very build order based.
In regards, if I'm not mistaken, Pult was also the one where there was the pause in the middle of it.
Yeah, that sucked. I mean, I was already significantly behind. I was pretty much going to lose either way, but to have two pauses right in the middle of being attacked.
The actual engagement, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
the lag as well, because obviously that affects your control.
And someone had asked, one of the questions I actually submitted was, you know, how like hard is it to recover from something like that? Like,
I don't know if it really changed the outcome of the battles. Like I said, I was behind anyway, and it would have been very, very hard for us to hold that off despite that. It's just frustrating and kind of annoying. It didn't have much of an effect on the outcome of the game.
It was also the first time that you were actually not in the championship pools, but you started. I guess you had a high enough ranking that you started a little bit further in the winner bracket.
It was the bottom 16 from the New York Arena.
Okay.
Got placed into the fifth round.
So how was that for you in regards to the tournament itself? When usually you're at least playing games, did you find yourself having difficulty like being warmed up or anything in that regards?
No. I mean, the four matches I played was Jinro, JYP, Pult, and Nori, and that could essentially be a championship group anyway. So there wasn't a huge difference in terms of the quality of the players I played. Obviously, just, you know, I lost two matches and I was out, which sucks. But if you can't beat those players, you're not going to win the tournament anyway. I've always said it doesn't bother me too much, the difference between championship and open bracket. I kind of like having the extra matches to warm up. I don't know. It wasn't a huge difference for me, except obviously it makes it harder to place higher.
You almost got kind of nullified on that extra matches, though, by being placed higher up, you know? Like you played.
Yeah, first match we played against Jinro, who's not great, but he's still a pro player. Yeah.
And I'm trying to find it here. Let me... Inori beat definitely favorite Stefano, and then you went on to beat Inori. Did you happen to see Inori's and Stefano's game?
I saw the last half of the second game and all of the third game, yeah. He just did two base all-ins, both of them. One game in particular, he just went Nexus, Gateway, Forge, Cannon, all without scouting at all, and then spent all his Chrono Boosts on Warp Gate in order to get a 7:30 warp gate timing instead of normal 8 minute. And Stefano, you know, he plays calibrated to normal good play. He times his rushes so they come out perfectly to defend a normal plus one Zella timing. And he just got caught by that because Inori was willing to be so greedy. And that's kind of what I was talking about before. Inori, he's a bad player. Like, if you watch his mechanics, they are nothing special at all. He doesn't multitask. He doesn't harass. Or when he does, he loses units for absolutely nothing. He doesn't understand the game at all. He just has these really risky, abusive two-base builds figured out. He can execute the build, and either your opponent is not prepared for it and you win, or they are and you lose. And I think the matches versus me and Stefano are pretty much perfectly exemplary of that. Stefano has one of the best understandings of CVP in the game. Like, Domingo wins CVP just because he's twice as fast as opponents. But Stefano is always ready for everything. He has every time it figured out. He knows compositions better than anyone. He has really good instincts for the matchup. But Inori was willing to take ridiculous risks, and he got Stefano off guard, and he beat him. And I am, like, the opposite of that. My CVP is purely mechanics. I don't understand it very well at all. I make bad decisions quite a bit. I don't have instincts for the matchup like I do for ZB2 or ZBZ. But I was able to scout what he was doing, or in one case, I got lucky, and I beat him. So, you know, he beat someone who he really, really shouldn't. Then he lost to someone who maybe shouldn't have beat him, just because he's willing to play so fucking stupid. And that just utterly destroys the competitive integrity of the game. And players like that should be mocked and ridiculed and just fucked up.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I can totally see eye to eye with that ideology. Like, there's certain, like, types of players that
when you play against them, it's ultra frustrating because you're, like, to be a really good player, like, you have those programmed times in your head, like Greg was saying, for a good player. Like, you try and put yourself in your opponent's position, and you're like, okay, like, a really good Protoss, macro Protoss with, like, a good understanding of the game would probably do this. Or there's, like, a few variations. He would probably do this, 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 or this. So there's, like, four things that he would likely do if he's, like, an intelligible human being. And then there's players that do, like, the polar fucking opposite of what you think an intelligent person would do. And I don't know if it's because they're, like, idiot savants and they just, like playing retarded or just doing super risky strategies, but it works. Honestly,
it works some of the time. Like, you're not going to see Inori win a tournament because he can't do that through multiple matches. But he can knock out someone who should go further in the tournament. Him, like Stefano, did not. Stefano does not deserve to lose in round 9, but he did because Inori played like that.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
And I'm doing that knowing that a lot of people are going to be, you're just defending him because you do the same kind of stuff sometimes. But whatever.
Not true.
There are a lot of players who play that style, like it's not just Inori, and the reason is they can beat anyone, but of course they can lose to anyone, and a lot of people figure that's their best chance in general. Like if Inori were to play a standard straight-up style all the time, he probably wouldn't have beat MC at IPL3. He wouldn't have some of the fairly nice finishes that he had, you know? He wouldn't have been on a pro team in America, so... The hope I have for a player like Inori would be that, because in my opinion, I think Greg would agree with this, the most dangerous player is the guy that's capable of doing that kind of stuff, but then also playing completely standard.
Yeah.
Because then they have tools in their belts. So maybe Inori right now is that little Charizard, okay?
Is it fair to say that Marie King Prime has kind of established himself as a player that could be described in that way? Or do you think...
Yeah, that's exactly what Marine King is. He does retarded S builds early on, but a lot of the time they give him an advantage, and then he has good mechanics, but he actually has pretty bad decision-making going on from that point in the game.
So, I mean, I've been playing against those kind of guys that Greg described since Brood War. In fact, I have a tough time because as a Protoss player, a lot of the Koreans and other top Protoss players that I look to for inspiration, they play varying degrees of exactly what Greg just described. Like, they don't take as big of risk, but they take severe risks on a regular basis just as a Protoss playstyle. And in Brood War, at least, and of course we're comparing Brood War to StarCraft 2, but at the time, Brood War was, you know, very refined, very timed out, very balanced for the most part. So people that played that way were kind of the exception to the rule. Everyone else had their style that they played, and it was very sturdy. And in StarCraft 2, we don't have that stability just yet, so there's a lot of players that are choosing to go kind of the crazy way, and it's frustrating for me because it either works for him or it just doesn't, and not a lot of people understand what happens in between.
Penny, is there any thoughts on any of this?
I mean, just that I kind of gave my 2 cents. Like, that style of play is really hard for me to grasp because that's not personally the way I approach the game, and I think that, like, As a player of that style, it's definitely a great, like you guys were saying, it's a great thing to have. It's always good to have a couple extra tools in the belt, and if you can revert to those types of strategies, like, basically, like, the whole approach to the game for me, if that's your approach to the game, it just doesn't work, because your fallback as a good player and as a top-tier player has to be to approach a straight-up macro game with a player of equal caliber skill and to be able to go toe-to-toe with him. If you don't have that confidence, If you're walking into a match with somebody like, you know, a Dongregu or something, and you're like, okay, I straight up cannot play this guy in a straight up macro game. The only way I'm going to win this series is to, you know, cheese a couple games off him. But that's almost impossible in a finals anyway because it's like a best of 7. But just that whole mentality of, like, gaming someone out of a best of to move on with a few strategies that you know are, like, super risky, and if you get caught, you're totally screwed. But if he doesn't scout properly, or he doesn't know that that's your style of play, and he's not ready for a player who's willing to put everything on the line like that, then yeah, you can walk away with a best of 3 victory, maybe a best of 5 victory. But, like, your career as a pro gamer is totally based on that mentality. Like, you have no solid base. Like, if you look at a player as like a house, you want like a cement foundation, and that's going to be like your macro
brick house.
Toe-to-toe game. Yeah, exactly. And if this guy's building his whole foundation off of straws, like, it just...
Sure. Someone, and this was kind of a topic all weekend, that Complexity Heart was a player with a lot of, like, two-base timings and really just kind of going for those sort of piercing attacks. Do you feel like he's a player in that category as well, Greg, kind of like what you had described?
Yeah, Greg.
I'm pretty sure he is. Like, the only thing I had ever seen from him before was we actually played in the finals of some little Team Liquid tournament, like a weekend kind of thing, a few months ago, and I had literally not seen a single other game he played before this weekend, but he certainly seems to be very two-base oriented. Good enough mechanics if it gets past that, but not top four LG, not almost beat Dongregu kind of caliber player.
His TVZ was a lot better than his other matchup.
That's true. His TVP looked like it was from, well, you said it looked like it from 8 months ago or so.
Someone on Twitter just said, can't you call a guy taking a huge risk building 70 workers before any units cheese in a reverse kind of way?
Yeah, it is. I don't do that. I'm not sure
it
why.
Is.
That. Yeah, that's like a community misconception. But yeah, that being greedy is just as risky as being super aggressive.
But then, on the same hand, I feel like commentators have almost an obligation. Because in general, one of the easy things to do is like, you look at Stefano or you look at Rhett and you just go, well, they just kind of make drones and then, you know, that's it. But I find it actually to be really cool because I think Zerg play relies on making good scouting decisions and finding out when you can get those drones up.
Yeah.
And the ones that at least do it with good information, I feel like that's actually an art form in and of itself. The players that just kind of course, die to like five zealots and like just never scouted and had two lings on the map, I have no sympathy for those guys. Because those guys do exist, by the way. You would be disgusted by some of the bases I've entered with, like, five cells. And I'm like, they walked across the map and shit. I'm going to tell my story someday.
All right. Let's kind of shift focus a little bit. In Control, you want to talk a little bit about your run?
Yeah. Obviously, kind of same, but too far and away, lesser degrees than Greg. I played well in some matches, but I was disappointed with the results. Like, the first guy I played, this is kind of funny. I played a guy who signed up on a different name, and he played on a gold account, which is like some of the meta game that's happening now at MLG. Because apparently he's on like a semi-pro team, and he's a Masters, like a high Masters, Grandmaster player.
Wasn't it Clash Panther?
Oh, I played him too, but this was a guy by the name of IMP Magical or something like that. And it was funny because the whole match like put me off a little bit. Like I felt like I was playing this, like I said, like a gold league. Like, hey, I'm at Columbus to have fun and play. So I'm like, hey, dude, how you doing? He's like, good. How are you? And I was like, good. He's like, good. We're gonna have a great match. I was like, oh, yeah, it'll be a great match. I like shake his hand. I'm like, yeah. It's like, is your first LG? He's like, yep. But I was starting to get like a very serious vibe from him, and I was like, oh shit, okay. So the first game went according to plan, and please, no disrespect to this guy at all for everything that I'm about to say, so please don't take it that way, but there was like little things, like I could tell he was nervous or just a few steps below, because things like my probe would attack his probe and then five would go after mine, then I'd walk it out of his, like outside of his mineral wine, and like he'd follow it for a while, and he was like, there's a lot of Corona boost not being used. So I was kind of reading it and being like, okay, cool. This is a nice warm-up match. So game two, I four-gate him. And it's more of the same. Like, stuff's dying right and left, and there's kind of little silly things happening. He does end up holding it off, but I'm like a thousand miles ahead. So there's this really bad voice in my head. I can actually blame all my losses on it. And it says, hey, in control, you should go two-base carrier because you're really far ahead, and it'll be fun. And I was like, what a great idea. I've got a game to give anyway. So I start going carrier. And the guy starts coming up my ramp with Archons and Zealots and Stalkers off of one base after I got him to cancel his expansion that he tried to build too. So I'm like literally as high as I can possibly be. And carrier's just not so hot. They died, no problem. He starts kind of just murdering me in my base. And I was like, I like literally that same voice was like turned into a different kind of voice. I was like, all right, Jeff, real talk.
What?
If you lose in the first round of MLG to a guy on a gold player, this is it. You're done. You have to do something else. So I was like, no. So I game 3 went according to plan at Forgatum. It was a pretty easy victory. And then afterwards, I ended up finding out that he's actually, like, a fairly good player, which then made me feel bad because I actually have no excuse for the carriers. That's just kind of a dick thing to do anyway. So that voice needs to go away. But the part I was happy about is I kind of kept my cool throughout the whole thing, whereas in previous MLGs, like, the weight of the world's on my shoulders, so I'd make even worse mistakes, and I'd play at a much lesser level, which is very upsetting. But then after then, I played Clash Panther, who again signed up on a different name. So I thought I was playing, like, Magical Muffins Man 1-2-4 or something like that.
The MLG creeper. Got,
it happened twice?
Fast and
yeah,
good.
Twice in a row. Like, we looked at our draw, and I was like, oh, wow, this will be so simple. And
this was L. David 19?
So, yeah, I guess. Something like that. And,
but people do this, by the way, though. Like, High Masters players take, like, alternate aliases, and they're just like, oh, what if I go to MLG and, like, knock out in control? That'd be
sweet.
Well,
Panther's like a... Actually, he's like a Korean import Grandmaster, pretty good Terran. But I think this is his first MLG and probably one of his first offline tournaments, so he was actually fairly nervous as well. Had a good series with him, 1-2-0. Again, there's like a game where he took out my natural and was way in the lead, and then I kind of came back and played really well and won that, so I was happy with that. And then the kind of funny thing was I either had Sleep or Symbol coming up, and actually in practice I beat Sleep again the day before. And Bling had me, like, talking all this shit to him, and then Bling went over there and, like, started razzing him up. So it was, like, an ongoing joke. Every time Sleep saw me, he's like, oh, you too, Gosu. Like, I'm like, no, obviously not. We were goofing around that way. So secretly, I was actually really excited if I could play Sleep again, just because you can start to get to inside someone's head a little bit.
Sure.
But then I got Symbol instead, and Symbol took my face and just kind of held it below the water, and, you know, I was like, don't do that. He's like just holding my head below the water longer, and then I stopped moving. Kind of silly games. Like, one game I did my two base timing that I've been working on, and he, I started off saying I was going to do the immortal version of it, and then like towards the end I was like, no, I'll add Colossus onto it, which slows it down by 2 minutes, and it was a terrible mistake. And then the second game we had this cheese fest game. And it went on for like 18 minutes, but he ended up getting the better of that. So then I dropped the loser bracket, and I played Binsky, who a lot of people haven't heard of. He's on Team Light. He's one of the proteges to Quirice. And I thought I played okay, but made some pretty severe mistakes and ended up losing for it. And the nice thing for me was, like, last year when I lost, I got outplayed or I got smashed or I made just devastatingly bad decisions, like, right and left. Whereas this year, I feel like it came down to just a couple bad choices that I can go home and work on. So I feel really positive about it, actually. It sucks that I lost as early as I did. I think it was, like, losers round 6 or 7. But at the end of the day, I was pretty okay with, like, where I'm going to go from here. So,
right. I mean, Pain User, you got a chance to actually watch MLG from home. I got the chance to watch from the casting desk. I want to talk about any players that might have stood out in your mind or any particular strategies or, you know, things that you saw. You know, MLG's often been sort of a breeding ground of things that eventually go on to become sort of a staple of the status quo in the game.
Any major tournament.
But I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure if we necessarily, you know, not saw anything like that. We actually saw a lot of fast three bases from every race. But what did you see in particular, and maybe any players that stood out in your mind?
I mean, I definitely saw a little bit of things in the nature that you're describing. Marine King was, I mean, he first of all was using a style against Zerg that hardly even utilized siege tanks in multiple games, which is like unheard of. The one game on Entombed Valley with DRG, I think, where he used Thors, went up to quick three base and then started using like a 3 factory 5 racks mech bio push. That's totally unheard of. And his ability to take wins time and time again throughout the tournament with just these like random wonky unit compositions that nobody else is really using as a staple. And, like, the really cool thing about what he was doing, I think, with the Thors is that, like, he's basically committing to a style of play where he's like, all right, I'm going to use Thors. If I lose a single battle and if he got totally overrun and lost all of those Thors, like, he's done. He's out of the game. But Marine King was using Medivacs to pick up all of the
severely wounded Thors and bringing out SCVs and, like, recycling the same Thors throughout battles during the game. So he was essentially taking, like, you know, 5-6 Thors and turning it into, like, 12 Thors because he kept saving the wounded ones over and over and over.
Right.
Which is just, like, awesome play in my eyes. I mean, he was all over the place. His micro, and he's, like, coming full circle as a player, because when I used to watch him, it was, like, his micro was the thing that stood out that was so astounding to me, and his ability to hold all-ins from Zerg and Protoss players where it's, like, no other player could hold that, you know, just with a small amount of units. But it seems like this time around, he had a lot of different looks and different strategies that he was throwing at players. And, I mean, he was using different build orders throughout the whole tournament. Like, command center first, 2 racks. Command center first into 3rd CC after, like,
right.
1 racks, gasless. Right. And then, like, transitioning into mech. I mean, he had so many different avenues that he went down. And he was able to just come out with the W in every situation. So, Marine King, yes, he won. Yes, he's the player to look at, but I don't think you should walk away with from it with just that. I mean, he was truly, like, he won versus DRG at the end, and I was thinking, like, there wasn't much of a struggle there. Like, he Rush took the victory.
Good.
He took the victory yeah. that, like, was already in his hands, and he just, like, it was like, oh, you know?
Which was there a little surprising considering at MLG Arena it was kind of the exact opposite where he had to climb back and did it at the end, but they felt like pretty close games all the way to the end.
Favorite moment?
Yes,
can
sir.
Can I say this real quick? Favorite moment in MLG Columbus was there was like 6 Marauders and a smattering of bio at DRG's 3rd on Antigua, and like 8 Banelings came rolling down. And I think it was day 9. Maybe Artosis, maybe Tasteless. One of those three guys said, "Oh, and here come the Banelings. Marine King's going to have to micro the crap out of this to survive." And then all the Banelings smash into the Marauders. And they didn't give a shit.
Oh, shit. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly
awesome.
What you're talking about. It's like the game was like already pretty much over. And like, bio was kind of like ransacking his natural, and it was like DRG's like last save, and he just lost like 30 Banelings to like 6 Marauders that were like evenly positioned and just standing
yeah.
there at the bottom of the ramp, like, not moving. that was a solid.
There's another time where Marine King was using like the he picked up, you know, you're talking about the Thor and the medevac pickups. He actually picked up a Thor and dropped it on a shitload of Banelings at one point. I think that was the same map on Antigua at the very center. Like, I mean, he was just very well-minded in everything that he was doing. And
wife's still a big Marine King fan?
What's that? Yeah, she is. She is, admittedly. Very
I mean,
big.
If you want to talk about, I know throughout the whole tournament, a lot of the casters were mentioning cost efficiency. And, like, how cost-effective players were getting. You know, a lot of Marine King's drops, he'd wedge the bio in between, like, 2 mineral spaces in the back
oh,
of the
hell
natural
yeah.
and kill tons of stuff. But as far as cost-effectiveness, like, if you just think about it in your head, like, the cost and overall effectiveness of, say, like, 3 Thors, and then you get into a battle, those Thors all get down into the deep, deep red. And then Terran's potential to recycle those units, repair them to full, and bring them into another battle, like, you're saving so much money. It's like, it's mind-blowing. Like, it's almost imbalanced in the hands of a player who's so good at saving the low Thors and keeping them alive and then recycling them. I thought that was just, like,
what do you think amazing. About that statement, Greg?
I don't know about that in particular, but kind of the lead-in to this topic, I think we saw a lot of development in CVT and a lot of potential for development in CVT. I talked about this in that Reddit thread you were showing earlier on in the show. I think Mutas, you can see in a lot of players, a lot of Zerg players have just completely forsaken Mutas in CVT right now. And from the play we saw from Dongregu versus Hart and Marine King, it's pretty clear that he should be forsaking them sometime in the near future. Because he won a game or two with Mutaling, I think. But by and large, he lost them or had a much more difficult time than he did when he was playing ground focus styles. I think Mutas are pretty much obsolete in the matchup. And then what we saw from Marine King is a result of the fact that that transition has already pretty much happened in Korea, or at least it started to. The Blue Flame Marauder Thor or Blue Flame Hellion Marauder Thor composition in particular is kind of a counter to Ling Infestor, because the Thors and Marauders tank so well versed and they can absorb fungus a lot. And then Blue Flame Hellion obviously just destroys Zerglings. So that's kind of the next step. If you get rid of tanks, then the Zerglings aren't nearly as effective themselves, and you don't have as many Marines, then the Fungals aren't as effective. But then we're going to see the next step where you start having at least either mixing in or at least having the capability to mix in massive amounts of Speed Roach, because it's possible to just produce so many units with that Zerg style. Obviously, Roach is not too expensive. And then you'll see them go that composition, and then you'll come in with a wave of Wing Roach Infestor and clean it all up. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure where the matchup's going to develop from there, but I think that's what we're going to see from it over the next couple of months. I think Mutas are pretty much going to go away, and then Terrans are going to go through at least this as a phase of how to deal with Wing Infestor.
In regards to... Go ahead, Payne Yuzer.
I was going to say, like, he touched on a really good point right there that I didn't really think about. Like, the lack of tanks totally changes the dynamic of the matchup, because, like, Marine King is essentially throwing the Zerg mentality back at them in a way. By removing tanks, like, he's taking out the whole, like, ebb and flow of the Terran trying to, like, move in position and set up his tanks in a really good spread and then, like, take inch by inch and work towards territory that you need to control. If you take tanks out of the equation, it removes the whole aspect of the Zerg, like, waiting to pounce on you when you make a mistake, waiting to pounce on you when your tanks aren't seized or when you're in transit or mobile. And essentially, you're just adding more production facilities, producing units as fast as humanly possible, and throwing them in waves at the Zerg with very quick resupply times, right? Hellion, super quick. Stimmed Bio, super quick. Thors, not so much, but they're still mobile, and much more mobile than tanks. So that's... I didn't really even think about the way that he was, like, revolutionizing the matchup in that regard, because it's kind of like playing to Zerg's... It's like playing Zerg the way that Zerg is going to play you, in a way.
Yeah, taking out tanks, actually, I think is really, really, really smart versus Ling Infestor, because to one extent, obviously, Ling's part of their effectiveness is just the fact that you use the tank's flash damage against the Terran, but also the mobility. Zerglings are just so incredibly fast. Counterattacking is a staple of that style. But when Terran has a more mobile army, either you can run back and react to the counter, or you're in Zerg space before they have the time to resupply and actually have a defensive wave of units as well. So it makes it much easier to deal with the counterattacking portion. The only problem is then you don't really have the thing that absolutely destroy Roaches, the tanks. Because Marauders, obviously, you know, you think Roach Marauder, you think Roaches get absolutely destroyed. But if you have Lings and Infestors and this macro advantage going into that, Roaches... Zerg actually does pretty well in that fight if there's no tanks.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come out, wait, Jeff, you have a pensive look. Do you need to get some words out before we take a break here?
You're so graceful, Wheat. That's all.
What? Graceful?
Graceful.
All right.
I like it.
I'm just looking out.
This is like the perfect time for a commercial.
Is it? It is? Wonderful. Great. When we come back, I hope that you guys got a chance to watch it. I want to talk a little bit about the Huck versus Nannywa game. That we saw. Did any of you guys see it?
I
actually missed it.
Okay.
That I did.
I was there, obviously.
It was on stream.
You saw it, Jeff?
I was a big yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll let you break it down then when we come back. The 3-minute insane microfest that was that. We'll be back with more Inside the Game after this, guys. Don't go away. right, guys, what's up? We're back for another hour here of Inside the Game. Don't forget, we've got the Masters Cup coming up after ITG. That will be, of course, here on OneMoreGame.tv. What is up, fellas? We are back. I'm trying to load up the game that we've got here. This was a loser bracket round 7 match, game 3. Huck versus Naniwa, cast by Axeltoss and Kibbles. And, yeah, so, Jeff, you got an opportunity to check this game out, to watch it. I only heard about it. Can you kind of break it down for us and tell us what happened?
Yeah, I mean, the kind of cool thing here is it kind of shows the value of a team. Basically what happens is the match before that is Nanny was playing against MC and Huck was playing Sock. And it was in with the extended series advantage, it was pretty obvious, but also just, I mean, unfortunately for Sock, Huck is one of the best PvP players on the planet, I think. It was very obvious that he was probably going to win. So actually, in between one of the matches, he leaned back and said, "Hey, can you go watch Nanny play the Nanny match?" Because he actually was going to play the winner of that. So as they were playing on the same kind of mini platform, I went over and I watched Nanny, and I sat and I just looked at his gameplay over and over again. I got to see 3 games between him and MC, which are great games in themselves. Kind of cool play from Nanny, a very different PvP from what you're usually seeing. And then after Huck's game, I said, "Yeah, let's go talk." And I took him aside and I said, "Listen, Naniwa doesn't scout up until 21 supply. Like, he'll check inside his base on Antigua Shipyard, but he doesn't check anywhere else. And he goes blind 2 gas, 2 gates, all Corona boosts on, like, non-warp gate things. So he's actually, that's just the greedier side of things. We're starting to see more and more of this." So I said, you can actually proxy gate him for an instant win. And, he didn't do it game 1 on dual site, which is, I think, a really smart choice. And he ended up taking that win, you know, just by good, strong pros versus pros play. And then in game 2, it was a really funny, interesting feeling for me because he definitely started to do it. But there's a huge risk to proxy gates. It's not actually totally an instant win. And the fact that he was doing something that I had talked with him about was, on the one hand, I was proud. But on the other hand, I was like, "Oh, shit, what if he loses?" He was doing it excellent, really well, but Naniwa is a freaking good player. And when those stalkers started popping out, I felt like a really, really nervous mother or something, just absolutely terrified of, like, what the hell happens if my advice is really, really bad and ends up being the wrong thing. And that's where Huck picks it up. Like, I think 99%, I mean, not even percentage, whatever that means, right? I think every other Protoss on the freaking planet probably loses in that situation. Like, having your probe pin stalkers back, being smart enough to know that the stalkers need vision up the ramp to go ahead and attack, so constantly trying to trap stalkers on that ramp to buy him time for his zealots to get around. Really just amazing cutting-edge stuff. Like, it was just gorgeous, and I think a lot of people detract from the entertainment of that match by allowing themselves to be like, "Well, Naniwa should have won." But he didn't. And in the heat of the battle situation like that, in really weird circumstances, like, Naniwa probably has faced that scenario 20 times, you know, in the 30,000 games he's played. It's just crazy. So I was my emotions were tied into it. My pride was, I think Huck at that time was the last EG standing. So we were really excited. And, you know, everyone was there supporting him. And it was like this just insanely stupid, weird, crazy game that only Huck could win from that point, I think. And, I'm not a big, like, rush the stage kind of guy. Like, when Huck won MLG Orlando, you know, we all went up there and congratulated and stuff, but I didn't blast through the booth and start tearing out panels and stuff like that. But when he won that game, because it was actually before it was even over, when he killed the final stalker, he himself, like, threw his hands up in the air because he knew he had won, and the whole place just blew up. It's a memory that I think I'll remember from EG and StarCraft 2 and MLG for a long time. It's just one of the most important and cool matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, we don't always get to see these kinds of things. They sort of happen when you least expect it, but I'm glad that they certainly were doing coverage all around. I mean, obviously for a win, does that ever affect you as a player? Like, you have so much adrenaline running through your body because you just had, like, the most ridiculous game?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. I think one of the big marks of a champion are the players that, I mean, one of the unseen boundaries that you have to overcome and get through is that, especially that. Like, people always, in the middle of a best of three, best of five, best of seven, they want to dialogue with themselves in between games, and oftentimes the voice can be a distraction. It can be telling you, oh my god, what if you win? You know, this is going to be so great. What are you going to do with the money? Or, oh no, what if you lose? You came so close. And then, like, after winning a big match like that, like, huge, huge adrenaline. So, a lot of the big champions of our time are the people that can control it. Like, Stefano looks like he's actually kind of bored when he's winning.
Yeah.
Greg, to a fault, I think, is like a sociopath up there, like beating Boxer in Extend Series and not really celebrating. What the hell, Greg?
I was mad that he was able to win those three games. Like,
yes. And like I said, I think he would be the only person on the planet to be mad in that situation. Like, I would have started peeing on the crowd. I would have, like,
I think that would be the sociopath move there.
Ran around. Anyways, but yeah, a lot of the champions of our time are the people that, like MC. Or if you want to go back to Brood War, like, they asked Jadon, like, what are you thinking when you're playing? And he's actually just thinking, I want to kill you, like, over and over again.
He actually sits there and, like, says that to himself before the game. So someone, a translator, once told me that he sits there and mouths it to himself before every match. I'm going to kill his opponent.
He's crazy. That's the kind of focus and drive that you need to be a champion, whereas... And that's why there's repeat winners, too, Wee, to your point. Like, people that can overcome that and then know that they can overcome that, then have confidence while their opponent is more than likely one of the first times they're in that situation. So they're actually still struggling with, like, oh, my God, you know, all the anxiety.
Yeah. You guys can watch the full VOD, by the way, at MajorLeagueGaming.com. So...
you got to buy the pass, though.
You do?
I just watched
it.
What? Well, I didn't have access to the VOD until I bought the...
Panda, so they're charging you. I remember they...
Flag it. All right, so any other players throughout the competition, Panda, or you know, Idra in control? And I'd throw out the same question, too, on the other end. Is there anyone who, you know, you thought was going to do better? This competition.
Astoji.
Yeah.
What do you want to say about Astoji?
Well, I was. He
did you like
impressive wins? Some
incorrect.
Really impressive.
Yeah.
I think the only
good person he beat was Puma, and he took a walkover. Well, actually, there's a couple of different things. First off, the admin, from what I was told, the admin gave him the decision whether or not to take a walkover, which should never, ever happen.
That's wrong, yes.
Players should never be given that option in any way.
Yeah, tell the player that.
Yeah, but so then Astoji did opt to take the walkover for the first game, and then he all-inned him twice, like super, super, no drone, Ling Bane all-in kind of stuff.
See, that's not the perception.
Like, my perception of it was like day nine hopping on stream and being like, Anastasia, you know, takes out Puma in whatever round. And I was like, dude,
we didn't know about that at the time, man. That's the one thing. I mean, it's actually like an interesting point that you bring up, because here's where we get most of our updates from, guys. Check this out right here. There you go. Liquipedia, you know,
yeah,
like
sure.
On here, it doesn't show, it, you know, we don't see that.
And I want to clarify something, too. Like, Astoji taking the win there, it's actually not his fault. I do not fault him for that.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I don't.
The fault to the admins,
you're
sir.
Supposed to win. You are supposed to win, and if a guy says, hey, we can give you this free win, it's like you're a legend and a hero if you go, no, I shall take the honorable path and do battle with him in the moon. Like, if you want to do that, awesome. All the power to you. Like, EP Gimmicks, a guy whose name will live famously because he actually went against the system to give him and White Raw a fair battle. Otherwise, Extend Series would have benefited him because White Raw got a forfeit, because he was off signing autographs with fans. Like, does that scenario sound like we should, you know, punish White Raw? No, not really. In this case, our Korean player Puma was off with other Korean players, not really aware of when the match goes. And by the way, to separate ourselves a little bit from this situation specifically, it's actually a really bad system. There's like a generic time you're supposed to play, which could be within 2 or 3 hours of the actual time you will play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you're not standing within earshot of them on the microphone, which means you're not watching the main stage, you're not getting food for yourself at a tournament where it's really hard to get food, and you speak English, which the Korean players don't, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So in this case, he was 17 or 25 minutes late, something like that, which is inexcusable. It's against the rules. Not trying to take blame off of EG. Absolutely, we should have handled that a lot better. But the ref should never ask the player, hey, do you want to take the win for that? Because no matter what answer the player gives there, it's like the wrong answer because they shouldn't have to answer that question.
Yeah. That exact same thing happened to me at the MLG Championships when I was playing against Tyler on Lost Temple. Like, and I just flipped it right back around on them. Like, Tyler had some crazy, like, three-gate timing build figured out against me when I was fast expanding, and he pushed, like, before I got my second bunker up or something. And he did a lot of damage. Like, he killed a bunch of SCVs, killed, like, half my army. I fought it off, and I was okay, but I was clearly behind in the game. And then the admins came up to me, and they were like, so, you can either restart and start fresh, or you can just take the loss. And then I was like, why are you even asking me that? Like, I'm obviously going to want to restart and play again. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, we're gonna leave it up to you as the player who we think was behind what you want to do. And I was like, there's no question that I was behind. I was obviously behind in the game. I wouldn't have given myself a loss, and I clearly want to restart. And then they're like, okay, well, we're going to make the decision then. And I was like,
well, why did you ask me then?
Players, we're obligated. Like, we're sent there to produce results. You know, that's a big part of the reason why we're there. And our teams and our sponsors spend that money to send us to those places. So we have an obligation to take whatever advantage can be afforded to us. But it sucks because you're then going to get chastised in the community. You're then going to, like, you just look bad for doing it. So I hope MLG, IPL, NESL, I hope everyone's listening. Like, you have to make the hard choice, and then you got to bear the consequences, and also LAN.
What do you guys think about that whole, like, scenario? Because obviously we have to deal with lag issues, we have to deal with all kinds of shit that can cause games to pause or restart, computers crash, all that kind of thing. Do you guys ever think that we're going to come to a situation... And if we do, what do you think the proper way to deal with it would be? Because we have no precedent for this, but, like, you know, DRG, Marine King Prime, Finals, Game 3, Marine King's kicking his ass, but Don Greg is not out yet, you know? He's still on 2 base, but Marine King has a huge advantage, he's stomping him, and then boom, we cut out right there. 9 out of 10 players would give the game to Marine King, but, like, it's a final situation. Do you think we'll ever find ourselves with a situation where we have to give a game to one player, and if we do, how do you think, like, a tournament should fight?
Well, I mean, yeah, go ahead, that, guys.
Worst one ever, Splash J-Dong.
Yeah.
That game.
Oh, the power outage?
Yeah.
Power outage when his Ultras Ling were starting to get back into the game. It was like the sick comeback.
Yeah.
I was of the belief that he actually had the game won, but there's a lot of people that were making the argument that Flash had it clearly won.
No.
It's like the most unfortunate circumstance.
J-Dong had a pretty heavy advantage, and they ended up giving him the win, but it was questionable-ish. And I think you almost always have to err on the side of regame. Like, it has to be really, really clear that someone's going to win to actually...
That's the best answer.
That is the best. Because you know what? You can't... Like, if a player has a chance, then you have to give it to them, because we've seen those chances make miracles happen. Like, we've seen it, like, the best game ever. So there's the chance, as far as Noni would interpret it, which means, like, he has a probe. And if the other guy falls out of his chair, he could actually win the game. This is an inside joke, I guess. A lot of people don't know that one. But then there's the other chance where it's like you're on 3 bases versus they're like 4.5, and you're down 50 supply, so you're probably going to die. But you can never take that. You can never give the win in that situation. You just never can.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough situation. I think one day, I mean, it's inevitable. It's only a matter of time with all the BNet issues, no LAN and all that shit. It's only a matter of time, dude.
Let's not go there tonight.
Oh, it'll happen, Wheat. It'll happen.
I agree with this towel guy, and we've talked it before. Like, I can't believe with the way that StarCraft saves information that we cannot just, like, literally pick up where we left off from a replay or something like that. But we visited that before. You know, some other players that kind of came out of MLG, I think, with a little bit more fame. Certainly. Crazy Moving had a nice little run, some good victories there. Sake was the other player who, you know, I mean, it shouldn't impress us that he does well, because honestly, in all of the results from the EPS, when I go through and I'm seeing, you know, what's going on over there, he's like, he's he's winning a shitload of them. So, you know, it's just more surprising because we don't see him or his name necessarily at as many events as we see other players. But you cannot automatically assume that just because you see a player at an event that, that you know, they are of a certain level or whatever. Were you going to say something, Greg?
Yeah, I think that happens to a lot of European players just because, I don't know, they don't. Something about DreamHack and IEM, the big European tournaments, and obviously EPS to an even greater extent, they just don't really get the publicity that the MLGs and the IPLs do. So the European players, obviously everyone competes more in their home leagues unless you're on like level of a Naniwa or a Huck and your team flies you to every big event. So the players like Sake and Nurcio and other good but not superstar Europeans, they mostly play in those less publicized European tournaments. So yeah, they're really, really good, but you just don't hear as much about them. They kind of go on the radar.
The problem is even systemic through more than just that. Like, what European-centric shows do you have where you're getting a lot of publicity to the players, like I say, the game or inside the game? Even live on 3, like, they'll bring on players. Oh. Go ahead, sorry.
There's that Massports one, but, like, they exist, they just don't get as much attention, as inside or the game or state of the game.
That's one and the same for me. Like, having a show and not getting attention on the show is, like, the same thing for me. And then the next thing, too, when you talk about teams that really broadcast and put their players out there and market them, it's like EG, and then second is Team Liquid, which does have European players, and then it's no question, the European players that you get constantly, you hear about, TLO, Rhett, Jinro to a certain extent, right? Like, these are the guys you hear about on a regular basis. And then there's teams like MAUS where I should know everything about those guys because they're some of the most remarkably talented and, like, they produce results on a regular basis. They're good people. Mm-hmm. They're fun. Thorzane's actually freaking hilarious. But I don't hear about them at all. Like, I actually don't take Alternate Attack too serious, to be honest. You can call me a hater all you want. I don't know shit about their team. I don't ever hear about it. Like, they're in EG Masters Cup, and that's, like, the first league I can ever tell you that I've ever seen Alternate Attack being a part of. Like,
I mean, the thing is like, they've still got a very heavy European presence, but it's just different. The team goes about things differently.
But Europeans know everything about EG, right? Like, in fact, it's like a running joke for them. They're sick about hearing about EG. that's, like, something that actually kind of chaps their gears, but that's, like, the most...
That's our purpose.
I think a lot of that has to do with EG kind of going about monetizing a gaming team the right way and just being that much farther along than all the other multi-gaming organizations. Like, EG has the power to make that exposure possible, and I don't think a lot of the other foreign teams are even close to that same level.
Yeah, there's a reason you kind of hear about EG as the Yankees of gaming, Alex, our CEO, likes to call us that. We get shit for how much money we actually give to players. The reason we have that money to give to players is because everyone knows who we are, and we do such a good job of pushing ourselves and getting the name, the EG brand, and all of our sponsors out there. Like, that's what all teams should be aspiring to do. Being happy to just sit back and like Jeff said, I'm not even sure what Alternate Attacks does short of playing EPS. You know, that's a bad thing. They should be aiming for more than that.
Here's the thing too. Nobody, that means stream chat, that means the 6,000 people listening, that means whoever says this, do not ever give a team an excuse for not doing it. Okay, I'm seeing the stream chat like, well, they only need to compete in Germany. Fine. But what legitimate argument could you ever give me for me not hearing more interviews with SOC, more content with videos, you know, like more inner clan matches, you know, or just like publicity? What team in their own right would be like... Tweeting is difficult, and have you ever tried to load a video to YouTube? It takes like 20 minutes. I can't freaking do that. Like, there's no excuse at all. And the fact that there's so many teams not doing it actually hurts the rest of us. I, as an EG player, want competition. I want MAUS elbowing EG for media space. I want it to be like, wow, that video they made is 10 times better than the EG one, because then we have to compete. Then we have legitimacy in the market. Right now, it's like EG, Team Liquid.
You make
right
a good
now,
point.
Right now, we just have a video cheating cinnamon, and you kind of win everything, you know?
Yep.
It's, I mean, there's a very valid point to all that. And quite frankly, like, we would all benefit from just the extra content being there anyway. You know, you talk about competition, and, you know, we've talked about saturation before, but, like, one thing we're not getting a whole lot more of in terms of saturation is interviews. I watch interviews all goddamn day. Like, seriously, just because we don't often, unless you're, like, sitting there talking to a player, and, like, you just don't necessarily get to hear those types of perspectives. It's actually one of the reasons why I love what Rod did all weekend, because I could sit back and go, oh, that's actually pretty cool. It makes that game even more substantial. Or, you know, I didn't realize they were that crushed about their loss, or, you know, whatever. It's just we don't have enough of that.
Absolutely.
Which, by the way, I want to give the opportunity a quick shout out to Chobo Peon, who started out the History of Esports. A little show, a little thread that is literally going all the way back. And he's done an amazing amount of work on it all. And
he's a great journalist in general.
What's that?
He's just a fantastic
He is. And if you guys haven't seen it, like, it is hard to not just, like, want to learn about some of this shit. And it's so interesting. And he actually starts in the 1915s and 50s and 60s, where he talks about sort of the first games and how quickly people were like, this is a competitive platform. Really interesting shit. Check it out. So, guys, I want to give you an opportunity. Any final comments on MLG? I mean, there is so much to talk about. We could probably fill up the rest of the time, but I did tell people we'd open up the phone line. So, any final comments on MLG from anyone?
Just in general, my general comment, as always, has been, like, if there's one that you have the means to go to in any way, shape, or form, but you're, like, on the fence about it because you don't know anyone that's going there, or, like, you could be doing something else, do yourself the favor and get your butt to an MLG. And if you can, especially MLG Anaheim.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be an in-control show if I didn't say something that, you know, isn't, like, the whole story, but, like, I guess they call it an announcement of announcement, but MLG Anaheim is actually going to be pivotally important for esports in general. It's going to be a mega event, and if you can come and be a part of that, then you are contributing to what my life is based on, and a lot of other people, and I'm sure something that entertains and hopefully enthralls a lot of you. So come be a part of it.
Can I just add to that, Jeff, that, like, based off of what I've heard, and let me explain that it's been very vague, but I can just tell when someone's telling you something, some of the things that are going on, even in its ultimate vagueness. I think if you've ever considered coming to an event, this might be probably one of the best events that you could possibly choose. I mean, just even if they do as good as Anaheim last year, it will be amazing. But I can't imagine that it won't be even more. I think the Blizzard being there is, made it special last year, probably do the same. So I would just echo what you say. Like, if you've ever been holding out, you know, there's still a lot of time between then and now. Get the jump. I think it's going to be freaking amazing.
Yeah, a lot of people seem really, really excited about it for reasons that they're not allowed to disclose yet. So I think Anaheim is going to be a pretty exciting event. Like, even on top of what Jeff said, coming out and supporting esports, it's just going to be really, really fun. MLGs are always awesome events. And Anaheim last year was by far the biggest. California has a huge StarCraft II population. Blizzard's right there. It's a really, really awesome event. There's no reason not to go if you can at all.
All right. Any other final thoughts about MLG Winter Championship?
I don't know. I really enjoyed the banter between casters, like, between all the games. Just kind of listening to Sean and Nick and you, just bounce ideas off of one another and review the games in between. Like, the whole production process for MLG, I feel like, is kind of really just coming together. There was less downtime, less just, like, idle shots of the crowd, much more seamless progression throughout the entire broadcast. And I don't know, Jeff, apparently, like, a lot of people said that, you know, it was terrible.
Jeff said a lot of people told Jeff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Like, people told you that it was terrible. But you weren't watching it. You were there, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I thought it was just great all around. And I think they're tying everything together. And, like, the more money that gets put into it and the more people they have working on it, I think it's just going to get better and better.
Well, I mean, speaking of which, too, we had a competition, you know, where first place got $25,000. That's pretty freaking awesome.
Yep.
You know, I hope we just see those pots increase. And
thank you, MLG, by the way. I don't think there should be no, like, broadcasted panel of people that are like, you know, $25,000 in the grand scheme of things isn't that much money. So can we, step it up, MLG? Like, no, $25,000 is good.
We're happy.
Yeah, that's a solid increase for sure.
Yep, $25,000 is some good shit, man. It's good stuff.
But all in all, just a great esports event, man. I miss MLGs, dude. I'm gonna try and get out to the next one if I can. I was just watching the whole thing. It's like you just miss the whole environment, and it's getting bigger, it's getting better. The crowds, the fans. I mean, it's all coming together, and I feel like that WCG and a lot of other organizations probably just missed the wave, man. It's like right now is like the right combination of corporate interest and community support, and everything's just kind of coming together right now and blooming in a way that it hadn't before in esports. I'm really excited for Anaheim too and future events.
I hope it's great. All right, let's open up the phone lines for the last little bit here of Inside the Game. You can Skype us at DJ Weed or telephone 909-581-8519.
Weed.
Yes, sir.
You think you're ever going to do Epileptic Gaming again?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, why?
Because if you don't do that, then I ask some Inside the Game in the near future, you have, like, your old Epileptic Gaming attitude back on for phone callers.
Yeah?
I want to be a part of that match.
Did you listen to a few of those?
Dude, I used to watch the show before I even, like, had a relationship with you at all.
Nice.
I just liked it.
That makes me happy. The answer is yes. I think you're going to see it in 2012. Sick. And it's going to be pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to it. So, let's take our first call here. We've got Derek on the line. Hello, Derek. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Jesus, Derek.
Wait, am I on Inside the Game?
I mean, he's calling. It says he's calling on his mobile too, which I just don't understand. So, all right, Derek. Sorry, buddy.
WCG.
We'll take our call here. Area code 908. Hello, hung up on me. What a dickhead. I just can't even believe it.
While you're trying to get someone, someone asked me about the cat's bet. He actually didn't bring a shirt, so we're gonna do it the next one, I guess.
What is this?
I lost a bet to him about Dongryu not winning GSL, So I have to wear a funny shirt, and he just didn't bring one.
He didn't bring it. Okay. All right. Here's the next one. Area code 808. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. I just had a question for Idran and Control.
Okay.
Coming up to the IPL, I was wondering their thoughts and maybe how they're feeling going into the IPL in the upcoming week.
I guess the question would be, are both of you guys attending? I know Pain User is.
Yeah, we are.
Oh. Okay.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am. Jeff has to go to PAX East. He is going to PAX.
All right. Thank you. Cool.
What?
All right.
Wait.
What? Oh, good question.
Okay. I guess he just wanted to know if you...
Right on.
...wanted to... if you were going. Yeah, the answer is yes.
Generally, you wait...
Yes and no.
After asking a question.
No. Right.
If you're going to go to PAX East, though, I'll be doing the Kingston booth, where you can challenge me in a game of StarCraft to win some Kingston swag. But I'm going to make it fun. I've got all kinds of like little celebrations planned out and little, you know, I'll be off racing and goofing around. Should be a good time. Artosis will be commentating. I think Wheat's actually going to be at PAX East as well.
I will be there. I will stop by. I choose to play you.
I would love that.
Yep. We got our next caller, guys. Matt's on the line. Matt, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going good.
So I played in the I attended MLG and played in the open brackets. So I had a couple of thoughts just from that perspective.
Okay.
One thing that I noticed that I think was a problem at all the other MLGs was the empty computers. All of these computers are sitting, you know, there for the last, you know, day and a half, 2 days, and I feel like there's got to be some way to, you know, get it, you know, activate them, get them used.
You mean, are you talking about as people are eliminated from the competition?
Yeah, like having like little, you know, I was thinking like a 2v2 tournament, something like that, like $10 entry, just something for fun like that. I don't know.
MLG wants to kind of keep the prestige of the tournament, not necessarily just have like busybody work to do. Like, as the computers get freed up, those admins that otherwise would be managing that tournament or those computers are then able to do like two or three at a time on each important match so that they go off without a hitch. But also, if they were to do tournaments, it would take away from the attention of their like premier matches. So, I mean, you might see that kind of fun stuff at smaller tournaments, but MLG is pretty. They're trying to make this into like, you know, MLB or something like that.
Yeah, I get that. I just, I think it was on Sunday at like, you know, 10 o'clock, I just saw like a bunch of admins like screwing around playing 2v2 with each other. I just thought that it could be utilized a little bit better.
I get it, man. We fired
him. Okay. Gotcha.
We fired him.
And then, just real quick, a couple of players that surprised me from the open bracket that don't necessarily get a lot of, you know, publicity just because they're not on huge teams and they don't have huge ROI. ISJ Echo made it to round 9 of the tournament, and I was just a little surprised because earlier In Control was talking about having to play either Sleep or Symbol, and J Echo was within like a couple of Baneling hits away of taking the series off of Symbol. So it's just, I feel like there are a couple of players that need to be maybe not recognized, but also studied a little bit more, because I think it would have been like a shocker if some of these players are getting through and then players aren't prepared for them, if that makes any sense. Like, also there's a Grandmaster player from NA, Yada, who made round 9 of the open bracket, of the loser's bracket, mm-hmm. taking out... He beat Destiny, Shu, Killer, and Druby.
Who is that? Who is the last name you said?
Yada.
Yada.
Who's...
That's not his full name, though. What was he listed on under the brackets?
CBG Yada. He goes to NYU.
Okay.
And he's a Korean-American. His replay pack is downloadable via Team Liquid. He has a thread on there. You can just search Yada. And he's a good Protoss player.
Like Yada?
Yata.
Oh, Yata. Yata.
He needs another Yata. P in there for epic success.
Yes.
But you know what? I appreciate your call, man, because you're absolutely right. A lot of these players that don't get attention should, and the ones you named, I agree with you full heartedly. I think Jekko, his stream is available on Team Liquid. He does commentary. It's another one of those Zerg commentary streams. It's a great job. Yada's kind of off and on, and... because he's like an NYU student, for God's sake, so I don't really blame the guy. It's a really hard school. But yeah, there's a lot of cool results like that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting because, you know, there are these players that, you know, very few people have heard about, and they're, you know, knocking out these big names and then losing to, you know, Yada lost to Alive in the winner's bracket and Puma in the loser's bracket. So it's not like, you know, they're beating a huge name and then get knocked out by, you know, High Masters Joe. Next round. So I just thought that was also interesting.
High Masters Joe worked hard to train for this tournament.
What do you got against High Masters? Man.
Hey, man, I don't know. That's me, so
on,
I don't know.
Does Yada have a Twitter?
I have no clue.
See, that's we got to get that guy on Twitter, get him on Kings of 10, you know, find out that he can, you know, drink like a fish and play all three races upside down with his toes and shit. Be great.
There you go.
All right. Hey, Matt, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. See you later.
Yep, bye. All right. You had something to say. Let's take this next call. We got Jordan on the line. Jordan, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. I guess, like, to go off of what the last caller just talked about, you know, players getting needed recognition, what about, like, from the business side of things, and actually as soon as I say this, I guess this would have been a better Live on 3 question, but how does a team know when it's time to part ways with a player because they're not getting the popularity that they deserve? Or kind of like, you know, like the ROI on a player is not good enough. Kind of like, until this weekend, Complexity Heart was completely unknown. How does Complexity then justify spending money on him? and then how does that apply to other circumstances? You know what I mean?
Well, quite frankly, I mean, I think what one of the things we're seeing, and then I'll let these guys comment too, is that like players are finding this success off of success of events by doing things like streaming, commentating, getting involved in like the, you know, the weekly tournaments and then streaming those, or you know, putting themselves out there. I think I'm not sure at this point. Yeah, I could be wrong in like the extreme circumstances, maybe the very top 0.5% that like results alone will keep anyone on a team.
Okay.
But what do you guys, I mean, what do you guys think from perspective of how does a team determine?
It depends on a team. Like EG is incredibly professionally run. They track viewership, track a lot of different numbers that involve both our performance and our publicity and popularity. How many people are watching us do what with what sponsors? How many people watch videos we put out? You know, how having us on Masters Cup changes the viewership relative to someone else. Just they have a lot of real concrete ways to measure how valuable we are to the team. And that's part of the reason EG is so successful. I get the impression that some teams are much less competent. They're just like, well, I think he's worth X, and he's willing to play for us for X, so we're good. And then they fail because they don't really have a solid business plan.
Okay.
So, you know, it depends team to team. Some are very, very professional about it. Some not so much.
Well, because I guess, like...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, I guess, like, that's actually, like, the... What you're saying about other teams outside of EG is exactly the point I was trying to make, because as a community, we're talking about a lot of the time we shouldn't be giving money to tournaments just because they're an esports tournament, right? Like, esports shouldn't be a charity. It should be a business. And a lot of times I feel like teams look at it as, well, he's family. You know, we can't kick him because he's family. So I guess that's just kind of the question I was...
Dude, eventually every team has to shed the, you know... We're buddies and we're making a clan. Like that was right. How I got started, because there was no money in Quake, right?
Yeah.
So it was like, did we kick the player because of stupid bullshit? Like Timmy slept with Bobby's girlfriend, man. You're off the team, man. What the fuck were you thinking, dude? You know, like the scenes changed completely. So as far as I'm concerned, like most teams that operate in a, hey, we're eight dudes and we have to get together. It's a great launching point. But eventually you'll find, like, it's actually, like, not a great environment to necessarily, like, foster, because there can be issues down the line when you have to bring, like, personal and emotional feelings into it.
Right.
Gotta be a business.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's like there's cool stuff, too. Like, some teams have actually recruited girls on their team. And I'm not trying to kick that hornet's nest, but I'm just saying, like, it's obviously for the publicity, right? Like, they do bring in unique viewership that another top-tier player wouldn't necessarily bring in. So there's definitely cool concepts and ideas that are floating around out there. And the thing is, too, is, like, of course we're biased, Greg and I, but my argument would be that the best model would be, like, the EG model, where you just kind of go raw numbers. And what works. The fan bases, if you can have them, are great. But there are other teams trying out different unique strategies that are pretty cool, too. The idea here is that the teams that are trying are cool. The teams that are just kind of floating around hoping to win every tournament, those are the teams that I think are underutilizing their potential, at least.
Thank
All right.
You.
Yeah, Jordan, thanks for your comment.
Have a good one.
Yep. Okay. Let's try another.
Shall we?
All right, we've got Shane on the line. Shane, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, excellent. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
No problem.
I've been a long-time listener. Just got back from MLG 12-hour drive, and it was a damn good show.
I'm glad you made it back alive.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask because, you know, when being at MLG, there's the huge shock factor of seeing all you, most of the players that you've been watching on stream and all that, and they're walking around, and you don't want to interrupt their routine or anything like that, and there's only scheduled signings and times for a few of these players. So I guess, you know, this has been talked to death, and I understand it, but what can the fans do to or for you as players and casters and community members to make you more comfortable, or to kind of find out when it's right to approach you, when it's inappropriate, like,
Can I actually kind of reform this question? Because I know we've talked about this on Inside the Game, but like, God damn it, wouldn't it be great if there was actually like a fan day that happened before the MLG event, or actually like after the end of the MLG event, if it like ended a little bit earlier? Because I think ultimately like that is the issue. Like, I had a great conversation with this about this with Andrew at CSN, where we were kind of talking about the same thing, where I felt like, you know, the players need to have these like signings. And I know, like, you guys, like EG, like, I think you kind of do an or make an effort to like set these things up too in different, you know, in different environments. But what do you guys think about that? I mean,
it's like the most frustrating thing sometimes. Like, I love interacting with fans, and I it's really cool just to have somebody even like recognize who you are, period, for whatever reason. It's an awesome feeling. And I think to answer your question in the most like basic form is just use your fucking head. Like, I've had people come up to me like when I'm between matches, stressed out, grubbing out on a sandwich because I have 5 minutes to get back to my station, and like people come up and they're like, hey, you know, can you sign this or can you sign my shirt? And of course I'm going to say yes. It's really, I think only two instances I've actually told people, like, no, like, I have something to do. Just come find me later. I promise I'll get back to you, and I'll take off. But it's really tough when somebody comes up to you, and they're just like, hey, can you please sign this? You know, if they got a mouse pad or something, it's just, like, use your head. If it looks like, you know, if the player has to go to the bathroom, or if it looks like he's in between matches, or he's thinking about something, or he's brooding on something, probably not the best time and place to... And not only that, when you're the first person to approach somebody, it's going to start like a chain reaction. Like, more people are going to come up, and more people are going to try and get their merch signed. So it's like, just use your head, be respectful about it. And then I think the ultimate and only solution to this problem is physical separation of the players and the fans. The way MLG does it right now is good for the macro scope of what StarCraft was at the time that they started this whole thing. Now it's getting to the point where they have legitimate superstars, people are being flown in from different countries, and it's like you have all the fans and all the players and the tournament area in this one, like, central location. There's no physical separation. And eventually, once this gets bigger, and once it actually, like, becomes an issue, if it does, which I think it will, once players have reached a certain superstar status, like, people are just going to inherently come up to them and ask them for signatures and ask their thoughts on things. Like, there has to be a physical separation at some point between the giant audience and the tournament itself.
Greg and Jeff, I mean, would you guys rather have sort of a day dedicated to that, where it's just sort of like, then you probably wouldn't have to deal with it in the, you know?
I don't really mind the current setup, but I honestly have no problem blowing off fans if I feel like, if I'm not in the mood for it, or if I have other things to do. Like, I have no compunctions about saying, sorry, not now, find me later. But that being said, I do try, and if I don't have anything else to do, I will sign, I'll stand there and wait until everyone has gone through. It's just, the only things I say is, don't come up to me after a match, like after I lost, don't do that. And just understand it if I say, no, I'm busy right now. Don't be a dick about it. Because you have people who are like, wow, what an asshole to walk off. Yeah. And that's just, what the fuck do I owe you? Avoid those two things. And I don't really, I think for everything else is pretty much okay.
I'm just going to echo Greg's, because it's pretty easy. Like, in general, not when they're eating and not after they lose specifically, players are a lot more likely to do fan interaction if they just won. But those are, like, loose guidelines. That's totally fine. And just to absolutely echo what Greg just said, like, sometimes they have to say no because they're going to a match, or they're talking to their teammate, or they just don't feel like it because they're really tired or something like that. Mm-hmm. Don't tweet at them. Don't email. Don't get found on a forum where you're like, yeah, I tried to get so-and-so's autograph, but he just didn't have the time for me. What a douchebag. Like, that kind of stuff. And like, I sift through all of it, actually, when I get home. I just got tweeted by... one of those Halo guys, like, yeah, I tried to say hi to you, but you couldn't be bothered to stop and chat. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. And I must say, from a fan's
perspective. Yeah, I have
had. Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, from a fan's perspective, the initial shock value of, like, right when everybody's getting in line, getting ready to go in, that was the best possible time, it seemed like, for everybody to go and get your pictures and, like, you know, get your autographs and stuff like that, because everybody's just, like, preparing. And it seems like, you know, nobody's down from a loss. Nobody's in the middle of eating. And if they are, it's pretty obvious. Everybody's, like, pumped and getting ready. And it's, like, that is when it's the easiest to interact with the fans, and that's when it's easiest for the fans to interact with the players.
That's why I think a fan day is where this, you know, eventually needs to go. Where it's like, right. No one has to think about games. Like, you know, we just talked earlier about alternate attacks, how maybe they don't necessarily have the same initiatives when it comes to online or how they run things. And so they don't get maybe as much exposure. But you have a fan day, interviews get done. Some of those teams that don't have the opportunity to do that kind of thing, they can. And then you avoid that stuff. And I think it's going to happen throughout the event anyway.
One problem with that is then you're bringing everyone out for an extra day. You have to pay for accommodations and whatnot. And I'm not really sure. Like,
of course. Like, I'm not expecting it to necessarily, like, happen, you know, even this year. But I could see that if exponentially the industry kept growing and we kept seeing more and more people at this event, like, I could see it getting...
Well, I mean, why don't we just use other professional sports as a model here?
Well, they have fan days.
Yes, they have fan
days. But I mean, Greg is right. I mean,
you also have to get to that level too, though. Like, I don't want to hear the story of a guy who drove from Louisiana to, you know, whatever MLG just to see a certain player, and because he couldn't make it to that one signing, he now is like, well, you're out of luck. Like, right now, we're at a stage where it's very important, I think, for the industry that these players are accessible to people. And again, it's within reason. So I think it should get to a certain point where it is a little bit more regulated and protected, because it is a little bit ridiculous to ask players to, like, they need a middle guy, right? Like, when a player says no to somebody for an autograph, they look like a dick. When some handler or management says, I'm sorry, that they're busy right now, it feels more formal, right? So that's why they have that infrastructure set in other sports. So there's we have to walk the balance, and for right now I think players can manage, but the fans, they just have to understand what's going on too, and as long as that harmony is met, I think it's just a better scenario overall.
Word. All right, man. Shane, thank you very much for your call.
Yeah, thanks for taking it. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. I think another thing, I don't know if you guys, like, have issues with it at all, but sometimes fans will request, like, really, like, either, like, a interview via camera, like, real quick, or, like, a text-based interview or something like that, but it's not for, like, any particular organization or anything like that. It could be, like I don't know, for, like, a blog or, like, a personal website or something, and, like, you'll end up doing, like, a 5 to 10 minute interview, like, just because you're being nice, but it's not. Like, there's people who, like, seem like they're press, you know? They'll be like, hey, I'm such and such with such and such, and then, like, I'll go, like, look it up after the fact, and it's like, you know, it's like someone's, like, personal website where they just, like, posted a video. But, I mean, I don't know.
People who stand there and try and get into a 5-10 minute conversation while there's a line of people waiting for their shot and autograph and pictures and whatnot, that's also kind of dickish and should be avoided.
But these things aside, by the way, I'm sure Greg will echo the sentiment. My experience was overly positive with the fans of Columbus, though. Like, there was two bad...
Oh, it always has been.
Yeah.
It always has been.
They're great, so thank you, guys.
It wants to stand out, but by far, the majority is just positive, just exactly what you'd want out of fan interaction.
We've got our next caller on the line. Alex, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
How's it going? How are you today?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Good. I've been, believe it or not, following a lot of SC2 stuff lately. For the guys, Idra and In Control, my name's Jabali from the fighting game community. I run an event CEO, but I've also been playing fighting games for a very long time. I actually started picking up StarCraft 2, and it's not a, like, kind of like an invasion thing of, you know, trying to get into esports and everything, but I've been legitimately enjoying the game. And I've been watching Idra's, actually, after what you just said, now I'm kind of a little like, uh-oh, but I've been a big fan of yours because I like your attitude when you play and you're always focused. I kind of disagree. I think sometimes we should be more in tune with our fans because they're the ones that help blow us up, but I can understand coming from, like, a StarCraft world, it's a much more intensive, like, mind-focused game, so when you're at an event, you definitely have to stay in focus, so I do agree with a fan day. You guys should definitely try to come up with that. But you know, I've actually been playing StarCraft II like every night, and just to compliment the game itself, ever since I've started playing it, every time I'm in my own stream streaming the game, I have nothing but help from the esports community. So I do have to be honest and give a compliment to that. Question
it's
to
like,
you?
Oh my
is,
gosh, people are nice to each other and shit. Like, what's going on?
People are nice to each other in the fighting game community too, but let's not have that debate.
I just play it.
I'm not here to debate that. I'm here as a fan of StarCraft. I want to feel welcome. I already do. I've been enjoying the game a lot. Like I said, I'll let you get the laughing out control. Go for it.
Last man. I apologize.
Good.
So yeah, no. What you call it? I'm not advertising anything. I was gonna ask Idra, as a new player coming into the game, you know, coming from a different community. Although I did grow up with RTSs and Red Alert and stuff, I know it's different. What is your best advice for somebody's like first week of playing a game besides watching matches and just getting into it? Do you suggest just getting your ass whipped and playing practice mode, or actually sticking to matches and practicing your builds?
I'm actually the wrong person to ask for that. The only new game I've played in the last 7 years was StarCraft 2. Obviously, playing StarCraft 1, okay. That doesn't really help that much.
You played some Street Fighter.
I guess so. I don't know. At that point, you're just so new to everything. I think you just have to play and get used to the interface and like learn the basics of the game. Because at that point, if you're actually going in cold, your first week of playing, you don't even know enough to really pick up information from replays and VODs and whatnot. So I guess at that point you just play until you get a better feel for the game, until you can actually understand replays and VODs, and then you move on to trying Mimic playstyles.
I actually got into, you know, you guys were talking about those epic 10-minute conversations that occasionally you'll have with fans, and, you know, when there's no one else around, like, I definitely will engage, but I talked to some guy that was like, you know, I just picked up StarCraft like a month ago and blah, 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 and it's just, like, been so amazing, and, you know, one of those stories, but he actually told me that he had an interesting sort of way to learn the game, and that's just like Greg said, to just kind of, like, tackle games, but afterwards, he would write down questions that he had, right? And then he would just go look them up, or he would talk with his StarCraft buddies and just ask all the questions. You know, like, isn't that, like, a great idea? I mean, I was like, damn, that's actually pretty smart, son.
It's like a dedicated version of what I would recommend, which is just create a community around yourself. So get some buddies in real life or ask around online and just have fun. Nobody should pick up StarCraft and be like, well, you know, I've seen people make quite a good chunk of change from this game. They seem to be enjoying what they do. Feel like right. If I gave it the old work ethic, I could do it too. And you shouldn't do that.
And you know what the best part is? Since I've started playing and I tweet about it, I like most people probably don't know, a lot of FGCers play StarCraft. I won't name names, but I've actually had like 10 guys that I only know from Street Fighter tournaments join me for 4v4s and play the game. So it is exactly how you say, get a group of buddies and just play and learn the game. And
yep.
I'm one of those guys, when I teach Street Fighter fighting games to people, it's like, don't. My way of doing it is telling them by don't do that, to try and drop bad habits. And that's the way I prefer to learn, is by saying, okay, don't do that again, you're going to get screwed over. So that's the way I've been learning. So, you know, it's been a great experience so far, and I'm definitely going to be watching some of these streams and getting into it. So
awesome. Awesome. All right, good Alex. Luck, man. Yeah, thank you. I've got to take our final call, but
we'll
play soon, man. All right, peace.
Bye.
All right, let's take our final call. And then we got closing words. Going to have to make this one click. Ladies and gentlemen, the fourth guest of Inside the Game, the fourth host of Inside the Game. We got Goat Lust. And Goat Lust, we're kind of short on time. So I hope you got a quick and dirty one for us here this week.
Oh, fucking oath, mate. How are you in control, mate? How are
That's
you, mate?
Better. You remembered. Thank you. I'm so happy.
All right. Who do you think's the next big player who's going to drop off the scene? I mean, right after Marine King, of course.
It's going to happen eventually, yeah.
Hold on. I have a question. I have a question for you. How was your walkabout?
It was all right. There was a bit of bad weather on Sunday, and it was pretty fucked, sort of. The jungle was pretty thick in there. Saturday. So we didn't actually get very far.
Okay,
so when I say bad weather, I'm envisioning like a dust storm and, you know, like 95 degree weather and stuff. Is it for you that like
clouds.
Is there a giant wall of death sand and like Tasmanian devils come running out? How is
bad weather here is like that means it rains pretty much, because doesn't really happen, I guess, as much as it would probably happen over there. So if it rains,
does it rain
weather.
Counterclockwise there, though, at least? Or
fucking God, no, man.
All right. So is that your real question, or was that just kind of
question.
A...
Okay. So MKP has been on the rise. You know, it's pretty obvious that he's been doing something right if he's, you know, won these two tournaments back-to-back. And, I mean, it is kind of interesting that Greg said he'd drop off. But do you guys see this as, like, a natural progression after Terran had Ghosts nerfed and stuff, and he's more of an early-slash-mid-game player, and he's able to capitalize on...
I don't know that he even was that ghost-heavy of a user in the first place. Greg.
I think that's what he's saying. Like, him and MMA are going to be the standard bearers for Terran for a while because they were absolutely not dependent on ghosts. That is, at multitask you and or one with silly builds.
My two cents on MKP, like, I feel like he has rock-solid fundamentals. Like, his micro, his mechanics, his macro is just rock solid. And I feel like it always has been. Whenever I've watched him micro, like, small battle situations, I'm always really impressed. But I feel like as of late, he's started to mature as a player and evolve. Like, he's really putting the whole strategical sense of the game together. And applying that to his ridiculous micro and his ridiculous mechanics, I think, makes a whole different monster. And I feel like... The like next gen players that they're able to come up understanding things that it took me as a player and as a gamer years to understand, you know, starting out watching Brood War and learning macro builds and like how to play quote unquote properly and that sort of stuff. I was wrapping my head around all that kind of stuff when I was like 16, 17, and these kids are starting when they're, you know, like 13, 14 with I think that players like that are the future because their fundamentals are so good that if they actually have a decent brain as well and they can start to learn the strategy and pick up things from other players and apply that to their own style, that like they'll be around for a while. I don't think MKP's going anywhere.
Greg?
I thought he looked... I get tickled by Greg's rage against him, but Marine King actually looked... pretty freaking good, man. Like, crushing MC.
His mid-game TVC... Well, the MC game. Build order shit. But his TVC mid-game is definitely ahead of the curve. I think that's something Terrence are going to be experimenting with a lot more. I don't know. I feel his decision-making is incredibly...
It's okay to be wrong, Greg. Let it out. Like, just...
I maintain that he should not be good. He may be good, but he should not.
Well... That aside, I'll tell you what, man, he looks pretty damn good. I mean, the thing is, too, is, like, people have been talking about how he's not going to be good for a while, but he's actually, like, it goes back to the beta where he was the guy who was making runs, taking second place, which I know nobody likes to give glory to second place, but damn it, man, that's still pretty impressive, and now it's two tournaments in a row where he's faced Dongregu, arguably the best Zerg, if not the best player on the planet, and beaten him both times. It's looking pretty good for Marine King fans, I gotta say.
Looking pretty good.
Well, on that note, Dongregu really needs to stop making mutas, though. Like, I know this is funny, given I was a very dedicated muta user up till recently, but just his mechanics are so ridiculously good, but mutas, we saw those games. He was struggling in situations where he definitely would not have. He had been
now, but Greg, I agree with you 110%, but do you think that is something that Dongregu should have picked up on the metagame before the tournament, or do you think that Marine King... suddenly having four Thors.
Holy mother of God. Holy
oh, Barristan, put her down. Put her down, Barristan. Go, put her down. Handle business, dude.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, what I was trying to say is do you think that...
Honestly, I was more talking about the game source Heart than versus Marine King. Marine King is playing a new style that pretty good for Sling and Fester too. But Hart was just playing the generic TVZ, and it obviously felt like Mutiling just, you know, turns are just too good versus Mutiling now.
Yeah, it seemed like I'm talking about the two games where DRG, like, attempted to go Mutas and was instantly just like, all right, this isn't going to work, and he completely changed his unit composition and tried to switch into, like, an Infestor Ling Roach Baneling style. Because, like, the game on Entombed is a perfect example where Marine King busted out the Blue Flame Hellion Thor, like, heavy Marine build. And right at the time where the Mutas came out, Marine King already had 3 Thors on the field and like 30 or 40 Marines, and he had them positioned like perfectly just waiting for the Muta transition. So I agree with you. I think Zergs need to drop it, but do you think that that's a mistake on DRG's part for not like realizing this ahead of time and dropping it early, or do you think that MKP had a badass build that changed the meta game and kind of shut down Muta play from Zergs?
Mutas have been on the way out for a long time. Even Marine King had nice builds going into it, but even just generic play, the quick 3 orbitals, double upgrades, just solid standard macro. Terrans are just, they have been too good versus Mutas for quite a while now. I think Darnke was honestly a little behind on the times in terms of ZBT strategy.
All right, guys, I hate to cut this off, but we do have to wrap up because Masters Cup is going to be starting here soon. So, Goatless, thank you for calling in yet again.
Yeah, great, no worries, always. Guys.
Take care.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Gents.
See you later, next week. Goat. Peace. All right, so we got to make this quick. Wrapping up, X6 Pain user, you kick us off.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and watching us babble about this thing called StarCraft. You can follow me on Twitter if you like. I'm at Pain user. Big shout out to our teamers, TT Esports, PureTrack, and ES Reality. And that's about it. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being on the show, guys.
Great. Greg?
Thank you for all the fans, everyone watching. Thank you to Team Evil Geniuses and all of our great sponsors, Intel.
You dropped the fans who like me, dude.
That, no, I keep that. If you can't, if you use it every time, it's not that special. You know,
okay.
Got to mix it in. Intel, Steel Series, Monster, Kingston HyperX, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire, plus all our other great sponsors. Big thanks to them. And you can follow me on Twitter at Idrajit, IDRAJIT, or watch my stream at Idrajit.tv. Thank you.
And Control.
Same as well, our sponsors that Greg just listed off. My team, Evil Geniuses, very happy and thankful for them. I'll be at PAX East, like we talked about earlier, as well as Weed, JP, Artosis, and a whole bunch of other great industry people. I think Sundance might make an appearance. I don't know who else. But yeah, please come out and say hi. Outside of that, there's always good stuff a-cooking. You can check out our EG practices on my stream, IndieControl TV on Twitch. Follow me on Twitter, EG Control. And thank you, everybody. It was a great weekend at MLG. So if you're listening to this and you're from Columbus or went there, I really appreciate you guys for being a part of that experience. It was a lot of good stuff. And, yeah, thank you, guys.
I will be joining In Control at PAX East. In fact, we're going to – did you mention the State of the Game panel?
I did not, actually.
Oh,
thank you.
We're going to be doing another panel, which should be great. More details on that to come. Some interesting – new perspectives on that panel as it from last year, and I hope to see you all. I think that I'll probably also be attending the Chow Bistro Barcraft if they have one for IPL4, which was my first Barcraft I went to, and I hope it'll be my second one pretty much too. So
wait, you'll be at Chow Bistro? How is that possible? Are you leaving PAX early or something?
What? What do you mean?
You don't mean Chow Bistro? Chow Bistro is Seattle.
Oh my God! You're right. You're right. Yeah, it's gonna have to be a Boston Barcraft.
I'm sorry,
there is a Boston Barcraft. My bad.
They're doing it big though, and I think we'll all be.
I'm on the other side of the fucking U.S. My bad. that'll be next time. That'll be next time. So, yeah, definitely. If you're gonna be at PAX, hit us up. Let us know you're there. And of course, good luck to Greg. Of course, we do have one show though before PAX and IPL next week, so we'll be talking a little bit more about that. Thanks for joining us. And coming up next is going to be the Masters Cup. I have no idea who's playing, but I'm sure it's going to be two great teams.
Vile versus Empire. Cast by DeMuslim and... what's Isaac's ID?
Isaac.
Oh, he was
a WoW player for EG. He's now cast quite a bit.
It's like Archangel or some shit.
Tell JYP's got an awesome voice. Seriously, that dude's going to be a Korean commentator, man.
JYP, DJ Wheat say you have good voice. Yeah. good voice. Thing that comes out of your face.
This is like the eighth time I've had someone tell him.
When you speak, DJ Wheat. Yeah.
That was the one that got the point across.
He got it.
Oh, shit. That is a perfect way to end the show. Guys, we'll see you next week on another episode of Inside the Game. We're out of here. Peace!